I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Pennsylvania Attorney General Kathleen Kane was arraigned and fingerprinted on Saturday. Last Thursday, Montgomery County District Attorney Risa Vetri Furman charged Kane with perjury, obstruction of justice, and other crimes for leaking secret grand jury information and lying about it under oath. Kathleen Kane says she will fight the charges and will not resign. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf has called for her to step aside. These allegations that have been brewing for months, if true, are a serious indictment of Kane, elected to office in 2012 and considered a rising star in the Democratic Party. Here to talk about the case against Kathleen Kane is Chris Borick. He's a professor of political science at Muhlenberg College, also director of the college's Institute of Public Opinion. And Chris Borick, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Also with us is Brad Bumstead. He's Capitol reporter for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. And Brad Bumstead, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty, and especially for having me on with Chris, who's one of the most insightful analysts in the state. I'm not just saying.
Well, it's nice to know that we've had Chris on a bunch of times, and for you as well, Brad. And Chris, let me start with you. When was the last time a Pennsylvania attorney general was indicted?
I think you have to go back to the 1990s with Ernie Priate, Republican attorney general in the early part of the 90s. Also, by the way, from the Scranton area. So it's been a pretty poor run in terms of the attorney generals that have come out of the Northeast.
And Chris, what do you make of this indictment? We're going to take it apart, but sort of broadly speaking, as you read it, as you digest it, what's your takeaway?
You know, Marty, it's an unbelievable story in the sense that as we talked about in the past, she was a rising star. I mean, a meteoric rise, had support. You know, even a year and a half ago, people were talking about her making a run for the United States Senate against Pat Toomey this time around. And to see the fall in the way that it's happened is really quite amazing. You know, as you look down the list of things that have gone wrong for her, if you will, it's a series of poor decision making, a lot of inexperience, I would argue, a lot of hubris, a lot of in many ways, I think, you know, trying to portray an image that ultimately was her undoing, or looks like it will be her undoing. It's really an amazing story, and Brad, who covers Pennsylvania corruption in an amazing way, has written a lot about it. It's kind of a unique case in the sense that the corruption here is not what we usually see in the state. It's much more kind of personal driven and not about money, not about those things that we often see really taking down individuals in the state politically, but much more about kind of personal politics and vendettas, and it's a sad case in many ways.
Indeed, it is. And Brad, just picking up on what Chris said there, and if you read the Furman indictment, the goal, at least according to the Montgomery County District Attorney, was essentially to retaliate against a former aide and Kathleen Kane's perceived critics. As I said, we'll go through some of the detail here, but that was one thing that really struck me.
Well, and you're absolutely correct. This was, at its heart, a vendetta against a fellow prosecutor who Kane claimed had leaked the so-called Stain case and embarrassed her. At least that's according to this criminal complaint. And just for the record, I would say this is not an indictment. This is a criminal complaint filed as an affidavit of probable cause. It's not like what we see come out of the federal system or come out of the statewide grand juries. Just as a footnote, also that Priate was 1995, the last attorney general who was charged, and he was convicted of mail fraud and did 11 months in a federal prison.
And Brad, one of the things that Kathleen Kane said when she was running for office is she wanted to take down the old boys network in Harrisburg. And one of the arguments that she has had through her tenure as attorney general is that she has been going after this network. And it seems even some of her lawyers have defended her, saying this is the old boys network fighting back, really trying to discredit an attorney general.
Further, her previous paid spokesman from Washington, D.C., Lanny Davis, who, of course, was nationally known as a spokesman for the Clinton White House on scandal issues, claimed that as this investigation was in its early stages, that it was angry white Republican men who were after her. And that was their theme all along, that white men, Republican men, were after her, trying to do her in. Well, that's a little hard to claim when you look at the chief prosecutor, that's being Reese Vetri Furman, a woman, and Seth Williams, an African-American district attorney, who clearly went after the cases that, Kane wouldn't prosecute of legislators taking bribes, and he's gotten convictions on ones that she would not prosecute. And he's had some hard-hitting statements about her. So these are not white men by any stretch of the imagination.
And Chris, going back to you, just to make sure our listeners kind of understand how this started, and it goes back to some action she took to shut down a sting operation, involved some Democratic lawmakers accepting cash. She shut down this investigation, saying it was racist, it was flawed, it was mishandled. Then the district attorney here in Philadelphia picks up the case, decides to continue these investigations. They plead guilty. In fact, there's some elections tomorrow to replace some of these people. But that seems to be where this all started.
Yeah, it's exactly right, Marty. And, that's where a lot of both the her career took the turn, and the case itself. That decision, right, not to, take on those cases really did affect her negatively in terms of the public perception, within the, political communities in the state. And ultimately, as you note, when Seth Williams picked those up and has successfully prosecuted or brought them to conclusion, the cases, it in many ways went in the face of what her, claims were in that case. It also was the prompt point in many ways for the, you know, when she did that, of bringing former prosecutor Frank Fina from the Corbett administration and the Attorney General's office into the, situation, when he you know, criticized her on, those and, was in many ways suspected by the Kane office of releasing that information about those investigations, that got her in the retaliation mode of releasing information about his investigation of the NAACP in Philadelphia earlier. And so it's a really big point in this long, you know, drawn out situation that she's dealing with.
And Brad, shortly after that article appeared in the Philadelphia Inquirer about her, I would say secretly, but certainly quietly, shutting down this investigation, she's quoted in an email saying, "I will not let them discredit me or my office. This is war." I mean, in a sense, sort of declaring war on what? On who? On Frank Fina?
On Frank Fina and anyone associated with him, which would include Seth Williams, who she later said in an email, "Seth is going to pay." And, you know, it just shows this vindictiveness that, if this is true, you know, based on what was alleged in this criminal complaint. And it would include Mark Costanzo, who was a very senior and well-respected prosecutor who worked with Fina. And, you know, Fina, just for some background, prosecuted the, Bonus Gate and the Computer Gate cases under Corbett. He was disliked tremendously by defense attorneys, which is often the case with good prosecutors. But he won, and he was as good a prosecutor as you'll ever see at putting complex conspiracy cases together. He also was the co-chair at the team that, convicted Jerry Sandusky. So he's got some heavy notches in his belt. He's well-respected by DAs across the state and prosecutors across the state, which is why, as word of this leaked out, Kane support really waned among those people who were like, "What are you doing?" You know, we didn't know all this. We didn't know that she was declaring war or Seth's going to pay. But, you know, clearly she was feuding with these people. And, you know, it all goes back to the Sting case. But people have told me, and I'm still weighing this, that it wasn't so much that she didn't prosecute the Sting case. prosecutors have wide discretion in what they decide to prosecute and what they don't, but it was how she explained it and what she did. And she went to the extreme of saying this was racially motivated. And that's where she got into this beef with Seth Williams, who's the first and only, to my knowledge, black elected DA in Pennsylvania, who took great offense at one of his people, FINA, being accused of racism. And so it was her explanations of it. And she blamed the dismissal of the charges against the undercover informant who videotaped these legislators taking cash. She blamed that on FINA, yet we find out about a week after this thing breaks that it was she, it was Kathleen Kane, who had signed the actual document that dismissed the case later. FINA did initially set it up, but she had to approve.
And going back to you, Chris, and just to, again, this is a many-tentacled story, and just to make sure our listeners understand, what Furman alleges is that Kathleen Kane then fed a story to the Philadelphia Daily News about an investigation into Jerry Mondesire when he was the head of the NAACP here in Philadelphia. This was a case that FINA had also investigated, apparently had closed down, and she leaks this then to the Philadelphia Daily News.
Yeah, that's right, Marty, and that's where the legal lines start to get crossed, at least allegedly, in this case, in that it appears that this was retribution for FINA's leak, if you will, regarding the investigation of the lawmakers in Philadelphia that Seth Williams Act eventually picks up on, and it seems from the charges, again the allegations, that the Attorney General in a reaction to what happened with those cases tries to lash out by showing some kind of improper or at least ineffective work on the part of FINA while he was in the Attorney General's office in looking at the NAACP case. And eventually that's the catalyst, if you will, or the spark point that starts the unraveling of this. And in many ways, it's really interesting, Marty, when you think about it. Leaks do happen all the time.
Sure.
They're omnipresent in this case. Even leaks in the investigation of Kane herself have come out and been investigated. Very, very omnipresent in the world. So it's not a gigantic event in itself per se, but often, as is in the case in situations like this, it's what happens after and the build up and the events and the reactions and the form of cover ups, if you will, that lead to the complete unraveling. And in many cases, that this is the point where that starts.
Well, we are talking about some of the charges or some of the cases against Kathleen Kane, Pennsylvania Attorney General. A very short break, and then we'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about Pennsylvania Attorney General Kathleen Kane was arraigned, fingerprinted on Saturday. A couple of days earlier, Montgomery County DA Risa Vetri Furman charged Kane with perjury, obstruction of justice, and other crimes for leaking secret grand jury information, lying about it under oath. Talking with Brad Bumstead, who's been covering this story as a Capitol reporter for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Also with us, Chris Borick, professor of political science at Muhlenberg College, director of the college's Institute of Public Opinion. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. I see some Facebook comments here. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Brad, let me just get a little more detail about what the district attorney of Montgomery County, what she alleges that Kathleen Kane did in terms of revealing secret grand jury information as this case was being investigated. What's the allegation?
Well, we'll get to the allegation, and I can lay that out because it's pretty extensive. But initially, like just to follow on what Chris was saying about grand jury leaks being common, he's correct. They often are, and I've been the recipient of them throughout my career, but they're often about, oh, the DA is going to file a case tomorrow, be at the courthouse. They're not about, in this case, what was really different and extreme about it is, A, it was allegedly directed to hurt a fellow prosecutor, and B, it did hurt a person, J. Wyatt Mondesir, who was never charged with a crime, but was implicated through this material that was released by the Attorney General's office to the Daily News. So you have a twofold aspect to this of making this different from other leaks. But Lisa, that's referring charge that there was that this was all part of a conspiracy on Cain's part. She wasn't charged with conspiracy, but I use that loosely to cover up and lie about the grand jury leak, and she charged her with obstruction of justice, official oppression, and the one felony, which is perjury. But it was the other material in this is what had people at the Capitol really look at this in a way that made the hair stand up on the back of their necks. That's my interpretation, not a quote. But it had to do with two employees in her office, two very loyal employees and confidants, apparently having permission to go into this big database that contained grand jury material. And only a couple people were allowed access to this. And David Pfeiffer, a special agent in charge of special investigations, brought Cain's driver, Patrick Reese, into this eval system, and they proceeded to do searches for grand jury material. And I'm talking about the grand jury that was investigating Cain. So allegedly, according to Furman, they were digging up testimony and appearances by certain attorney general's employees that could be used to intimidate them or bring that up to them in terms of what they're doing or counter it some way. So they were meddling with this grand jury. The second thing is that Reese was surreptitiously going through emails of other attorney general's employees, presumably looking for things of disloyalty. There was this between the lines, what came through was this paranoia within the office to go after all enemies, quote, enemies, unquote, who didn't agree with or weren't on board with Kathleen Cain.
Well, Chris, let me go back to you. And as director of the college's, Muhlenberg College's Institute of Public Opinion, have you been polling on this? Have you found there's public opinion about the allegations, Kathleen Cain's defense and denial of these allegations, and frankly, her refusal to step down or step aside or to resign?
Yeah, we've done some polling and some other folks, Franklin and Marshall, a firm called PPP, and a couple of other polling organizations have. And as you'd expect, it's taken a toll on the attorney general. At first, some of our first polling, when we looked at it, the state wasn't as engaged as maybe inside politics folks were in the case. But obviously, as it has become more in the public eye, it has taken a toll. Now, I haven't seen any polls yet post charges. Again, they've just come out last week. But I would imagine, especially with a lot of the Democratic world, including, of course, most notably Governor Wolf, calling for her to step aside, we're going to see a fairly substantial drop in her public standing, and her negatives, I can imagine, will be sky high.
In fact, we have a Democrat will be joining us in just a couple of minutes. We have an email from Beverly. She says, okay, Furman is a Republican. This is the Montgomery County District Attorney, Risa Vetri Furman. So Furman is a Republican. Given Pennsylvania politics, is this a political indictment? Chris, what do you make of that?
You know, it's hard to argue it's a political indictment. As we talked about, there are different types of acts that that and Brad did a great job of describing the difference in this case in terms of the leak. You know, if it was the leak and the leak alone, even the you know a fairly severe leak as Brad described, you might wonder, do you go full force like this? But it really is the record when you read the charges. Of the actions going on inside the Attorney General's office and some of the Nixonian, I hate to use that term, but in many ways Nixonian type of tactics and enemy list and payback and all the things that have come forth, it's a pretty damning list. So, I think it would be a reach to claim that as some have said, it's politically motivated, or it's part of the old boy network, as we just discussed before. And again, Kathleen Kane is probably right. There was some resentment to her. She was, you know, looked at maybe as coming in too fast and her star rising too fast. But even if that is the case, she presented more than ample opportunities for her opponents. To really, take her down, if you will. If it started that way, she helped contribute by providing a lot of fuel for that to happen.
Well, it seems, Brad, you know, there are a number of emails. Also, members of her office testified, and it seems that some of this testimony is where the allegations that she threatened termination of people.
She did terminate people, and, not
okay.
just threatened.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, she fired a lot of people there. There was also threats to fire other people. But the most notable firing that took place is a guy by the name of James Barker, who by all accounts was a top lawyer in her office and a good one and did his job. But he had testified against her interests at the statewide grand jury that recommended charges against Kane that Furman investigated. And he was under a court order from Montgomery County Judge William Carpenter, who was the supervisor of the grand jury, was under a protective order, and she fired him anyway. And, you know, people were just like aghast at that. How could you do that? And Furman said she's still investigating the Barker firing. So it wasn't just threats. There were votes.
Let me get to Representative Frank Dermody to join us. He's Democratic State Representative for Allegheny and Westmoreland Counties. He's the highest-ranking Democrat in the House in Harrisburg. And Representative Dermody, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. It's good to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Have you talked with Kathleen Kane, Attorney General Kathleen Kane, since these allegations went public?
No, I have not. No.
Do you think she should resign?
Well, yeah, I've said that. I think it's almost impossible to be able to run to be the chief law enforcement officer of the Commonwealth with these charges pending. I think it's going to be most difficult.
Does that mean
to run that office effectively?
Does that mean you believe the charges, or you just think the charges kind of hang over her?
Well, I think they hang over. Look, she's presumed innocent. It's nothing to do with guilt or innocence, and you know I hope it all works out. But in the time being, I mean, you are the chief. She is the chief law enforcement officer of the Commonwealth. These are serious charges, and I was listening in to the conversation. There's no question about that. And several lawyers in her office have testified. I mean, I think you have an office to run. It's a statewide office, and it's a very difficult one to do under the best of circumstances. I think it's going to be almost impossible to maintain it, her credibility while this. And she has to defend herself throughout this whole process also. She has to, if she's going to fight it, that's fine, but it's going to divert attention also.
She says resignation is an admission of guilt and that she's innocent of the charges and she's not guilty.
Well, I hope she isn't guilty, and she has to fight these charges right now. They are serious, and it really puts the office under a cloud. And I think that in order for that office to work effectively for all the people of the Commonwealth, it's probably best for her to step aside right now.
Does this hurt the Democratic Party in Pennsylvania?
Well, certainly it's not helpful. I'm hoping that it works out for everything, but sure, it's not helpful.
We were talking about this earlier with our guests, but Kathleen Kane has said, you know, when she campaigned for the job, she wanted to take on the old boys network in Harrisburg, the first woman attorney general in Pennsylvania. Does that fit with you at all? Do you feel like she was up against an old boys network and still is?
sound like he's up against an old boys network. There's just something to that. There's something to the office, I guess, since its inception. I was 40 years or so under Republicans. And so I'm sure she ran into some stone walls over there when she first took over. There hadn't been a Democrat in office ever. So I'm not, you know, it probably wasn't all fun for her. And I'm assuming there was some firing. She probably wanted to put her own people in place. And I understand that also. And she should have done that.
If she doesn't step aside, I mean, is there something that either your party or the legislature can do? I don't know whether impeachment, is that even on the table, or you know, some kind of way of forcing her out?
Well, about forcing her out, I have heard there's been some talk about impeachment. I have some experience with that. I led the investigation and was chairman of the committee of managers of the last impeachment in the Commonwealth, which was, you know, Justice Rolf Larson from the Supreme Court. That's a long and drawn out process. It should be. And it's nothing to fool around with. You're nullifying an election. And I'm glad I'm not involved if ever that comes up again. There is some talk of that, but I think that we'll see. But I it's not the way to go if we can avoid it. It should be avoided if we can.
What would you
Marty,
want?
Can I ask your guest a question?
Yes, this is Brad Bumstead. Go ahead, Brad.
Well, Frank, like in the Larson case, don't you believe that most cases where there's going to be some kind of an impeachment, it's not going to be until after a conviction?
Yeah, I agree with you there. And, you know, Rolf Larson, we were doing an investigation at the time he had his trial for the drug issues in Allegheny County. But it did gain steam after he was convicted finally and he wouldn't resign. So, yeah, that's probably when that would happen. I hope that's what would happen. It should be used rarely, if ever.
Final question to you, Representative Dermody. I mean, what would you say to Kathleen Kane if you could talk to her?
I'd say, look, you're in a tough spot. I understand that. You're a Democrat. I respect that. But for the good of the office and to make sure that it's effective and you're able to do your job, the offices and your employees and all your lawyers in the Attorney General's office, so they can do their job effectively, it would be best right now for everybody to step aside.
Actually, one more question. The governor has called for her to step aside. How many other Democrats are also saying what you're saying?
I saw where Eugene V. Pasquale has made some comments. Other than that, I haven't heard much from anybody.
Well, Frank Dermody, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
You're welcome, Marty. Thank you.
You're welcome. Democratic State Representative for Allegheny and Westmoreland Counties, the highest-ranking Democrat in the House in Harrisburg, one of a number of Democrats, including the governor of Pennsylvania, calling for Pennsylvania Attorney General Kathleen Kane to step down. Where do you stand on this issue? We want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We will include those comments in on our conversation. Chris, it's interesting. We hear from the governor. We just heard from Frank Dermody. I read about some other Democrats who basically are suggesting that she step aside. It will be interesting to see what she does in response to this pressure coming from her own party.
Yeah, it's mounting pressure, and it's coming from the highest ranked officials in the Democratic Party in the state, of course, with the governor at the top of the list. And how she responds? She's been very adamant in her public statements that she's not going anywhere. And that she's not going to step aside. And you start to think, well, what, you know, as Representative Dermody and Brad just talked about the other alternatives, the impeachment process, there's some other possible ways of getting her out of office by taking away her law license. But ultimately, if none of those things take place, what incentive right now does she have to step aside? She's facing these charges, her political career obviously seems to be in rubble. Does she have a motive right now to want to just say, okay, cash it in and walk away? And given what we know about Kathleen Kane from you know, her personal statements or what's come out in this case, she's fairly tough in terms of once she has an impression in her mind of having that broken. So I can't see this perhaps just going out in a whimper.
Brad, let me ask you, if a member of the Attorney General's office was charged with a felony, what are the requirements about what they do?
they would be immediately suspended without pay for felony, not for a misdemeanor, as in Patrick Reese, her driver, who is charged in this case. He's charged with a misdemeanor, indirect criminal contempt, so he's not suspended. However, the overall charge of felony, which does apply to Kathleen Kane with the one count of perjury, she is exempt from that, her office says, as an elected official. It's just for employees, not elected officials. There are others who disagree with that. Auditor General Eugene D. Pasquale, who is a fellow statewide office holder with Kane, says his policy is it applies to everyone in the office, including the elected official. So it's somewhat discretionary. But in her case, the policy doesn't apply to her, her spokesman says.
We're almost up on a break here. Brad, what is the mood in the Attorney General's office?
There's no other way to describe it, but it's pretty bad. I hear from people in the Attorney General's office regularly. On Saturday, it was in Sunday's paper. I had a story from a recently retired Attorney General employee who felt he was free now to talk on the record. And he just talked about morale at an all-time low. And he'd been in the agency for 28 years under every elected attorney general. He said he's never seen anything like this. There's fear of reprisals. And, you know, it's just creating stress on employees. And it's pretty bad from what he says, corroborated by others, and certainly alluded to in the criminal complaint by Lisa Furman.
That's Brad Bumstead, Capitol reporter for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Also with us, Chris Bork, professor of political science at Muhlenberg College in Pennsylvania. We are talking about the case against Pennsylvania Attorney General Kathleen Kane. And we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. Again, we're talking about Pennsylvania's Attorney General Kathleen Kane, arraigned and fingerprinted on Saturday, criminally charged last Thursday, Thursday by Montgomery County District Attorney Risa Vetri Furman, charged Kane with perjury, obstruction of justice, other crimes involved with leaking secret grand jury information, lying about it under oath. Kathleen Kane says she's done nothing wrong. She's going to fight it. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf has called for her to step aside. Talking with Chris Bork and Brad Bumstead about the allegations, the case against Kathleen Kane and what she is saying and doing in response. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. We want to know where you stand on this and whether you believe she should stay in office and fight it or whether you think it's time for her to go. 1-888-477-WHYY Radio Times at WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Chris, I just want to read two very different Facebook comments. One from William. She didn't do anything that people who took her down haven't done themselves. This is political revenge for her having embarrassed Frank Fina for exposing his incompetent and racist sting operation. John from Facebook, absolutely, she should step down. I'm a proud liberal. Her tenure has been an embarrassment since she took office as the top law enforcement official of the state. The AG cannot properly perform the functions of the state while under indictment. So clearly, there are, at least on our Facebook page, two very different opinions about this. And on the one hand, the charges are very serious. And on the other hand, you know, as I said at the top of the hour, we're talking about a woman considered to be a rising star in the Democratic Party.
Yeah, you know, you could have a little bit of both, Marty, in this situation. I guarantee there was resentment against her. She was, you know, as you said, seen as a rising star. She was historic. She outperformed both President Obama and Senator Casey in the 2012 election, winning more votes than anybody else in the state. She became the first Democrat elected to this position, the first woman elected to this position. She was the talk of the town, if you will. And would that cause individuals to resent her? probably just on that alone. It's politics, of course. That's what we see. But as I mentioned before, she, as you look at this, the litany of charges, if you look at the record and how this has transpired, she appears to have made mistake after mistake after mistake. And if we take it at its most generous, that she was kind of being set up to come in on this, she bit over and over and has taken actions allegedly in most mm-hmm. cases that just seem over the top, unprofessional, in many cases unethical, and in the end have put both her party and her office in a state of peril.
Well, Brad, and there's a whole other investigation we haven't really talked about, and this is when she was looking into the allegations, the charges against Jerry Sandusky. She found pornography, dirty jokes, pornographic pictures that were shared among prosecutors in her office. How did she handle that? And you know, just how graphic are we talking about here?
Well, that issue, it was very great. A lot of it was, I saw samples of it, but, clearly, that would be some basis for her to say, these were the people who were trying to do her in because she was on the trail of this porn within the office. However, she, as Chris says, she's made missteps and handled things badly. And she certainly handled the release of that in a terrible way, in the sense that reporters who had filed right to know all requests were brought in to look at the pictures and the video. Okay. But we'd say, well, whose was that?
Right.
And they'd say, well, that was so-and-so's, but they wouldn't have the documentation of the email string to support it. Okay. Well, okay. We're just going on the word of the Attorney General's office that this was so-and-so's, on so-and-so's, hard drive, but did they open it? That wasn't clear either. It's one thing to get porn email. It's another thing to look at it or worse, to forward it. But what happened was that when we, in response to our right to know all requests, she released about eight email strings that appeared to support that these people had the pornography. And guess what? They were all Republicans, and most of them had served, some did still serve, in the Corbett administration. And guess what? Again, it was approximately 3 weeks before the election, before, Corbett, former Governor Corbett faced Tom Wolf in the general election. So was that political? It certainly had the feel of it.
Are you saying, that she did that to try to discredit the governor?
I don't know about that. He was probably going to lose anyway, but it came out later that there were all sorts of other people, I think as many as 70, who'd been involved in the porn scandal, maybe eight or nine, I want to say, were also fired within her office, but she claimed she couldn't put those out right away because of union issues with them. But the point is, it was selectively released. For whatever reason, whether that was political or not, it was handled badly. You should wait till you get them all. You can release them all. If that's after the election, so be it.
Let me read a tweet to you, Chris. This is a tweet says, Kane jumped into the deep end before she learned to swim, and there are few deeper ends than the political abyss of Harrisburg. Agree? Disagree?
I agree totally. It's a great, great tweet. Sure. The Attorney General had limited experience in terms. She never elected to public office, served as an assistant DA up in Lackawanna County in the Scranton area, which is a different level of play than going to Harrisburg and dealing with the Attorney General office. Attorney General offices are always in the spotlight. It's the nature of the game. It's what type of business is taking place there. And if you are thrown in there, not thrown, but, by choice and elected into that office without a lot of experience, Harrisburg, as Brad will tell you, is a tough, tough place. The broad conditions that were there could be challenging for her. It's the actions, the decisions, the choices she has made all along the way that ultimately will probably prove to be her undoing. And again, the situation's a tough place to be. Attorney General office in a big state like Pennsylvania is not easy. Perhaps she simply wasn't up to the task.
Well, Brad, Mary Wilson had a really good piece this morning on our airwaves, just talking about some of the problems that she had in office, loss of staff, feuding that we've been talking about, some misstatements. You mentioned morale. I mean, do you think, perhaps based on hindsight, that this job was really too hard for her to manage with her background and experience?
Well, no, I don't know. I mean, I think that she apparently wasn't ready for prime time. However, in fairness to Kathleen King, one would have to say, and I think most people would agree, that her first year in office, 2013, was by most measures a great success. She did a number of things and that people were impressed with how she handled them. And one, for instance, was blocking Corbett's decision to privatize the state lottery. A lot of people thought that was just not a great idea to use a British firm to do that. The other was the gay marriage and refusing to defend the state in a gay marriage suit. That brought a lot of criticism as well from conservatives who said it's her job to defend any law, whether she likes it or not. But by and large, you know, her first year was a great success. 2014, after the Sting case came out, it just came crashing down. And, you know, she did, you know, demonstrate, poor decision-making on a lot of the things that came up. There's no question about it. Were people after her, people wanting to see her fail? There's no doubt about that either. But that happening and then responding to it in ways that set yourself up are two different things.
And Chris, I wonder if this isn't a bit of a test for the current governor, Tom Wolf, you know, new to politics, new to elective office. He's asking her to step aside. So far, she's saying no. Do you see this as a bit of a feud between the governor and the attorney general, both of whom are Democrats?
Yeah, it's a very awkward position, Marty, for Governor Wolf to be in. You know, she's a fellow Democrat. He's just came into office. This is by no means the type of scenario you want to be dealing with, you know, half a year into your first term in office. It's tricky. He has to, you know, clearly his preference is to have her step aside and be out of the picture. You know, how hard you go at that is another question. She has been elected by Pennsylvanians. She is in office. You know, there is the presumption of innocence till proven guilty. A lot of things set her up to at least make a case why she should stay. There's a lot of reasons, of course, for wanting her to step aside. But it's problematic. And it's problematic for Democrats as a whole. Do they want the specter, if you will, of Kathleen Kane and her troubles following them into an election year in Pennsylvania, a major election year? And so by all levels, you would think stepping aside would be the preference for Democrats throughout the state, except for Kathleen Kane.
Well, interestingly, Brad Bumstead, I know that Bill Clinton was an early-on supporter of Kathleen Kane. Can you imagine, and perhaps I'm asking you to speculate, which might be unfair to do, but imagine him kind of stepping in here?
Him stepping in now?
I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, to force her out? Or
just to talk to her?
Well, maybe to talk to her, but I can't imagine that Hillary Clinton would be enamored of having her on the ticket with her if Hillary indeed wins the Democratic nomination for president next year. But it's hard to see it. You know, clearly the connection was there in the background with the Clintons, but it would be pure speculation to, you know, really go any further. But, you know, the one thing that does stand out here is that to me, as I've heard different people talk about resignation, leave of absence, stepping aside, is that even if she does those, she still is cloaked in a presumption of innocence. She still is innocent, no matter what happens.
Right.
But there's a difference between having that presumption of innocence and being the state's chief law enforcement officer who's charging other people with crimes. And that's where the distinction comes in. Do you have the right to be attorney general while you're a criminal defendant? And there's no, you know, law that says you can't, but, you know, I think most people are looking at that and saying it's untenable.
We have an email from Jim saying, is there another option such as leave of absence that would allow her to step aside and let the assistant AG take over as interim until the trial is complete? Chris, I mean, there isn't a whole lot of precedent for this, but do you think that's an option?
You know, it's an option. There, again, we don't have precedent to say how that really plays out. And, you know, it would be, as you said, by the time we think about the case playing out and how long it would take, it could be seen as a soft way out for her if she wanted to take it. There are some other alternatives. The Supreme Court could look at suspending her law license. That possibly without the law says you have to have a law license to be the attorney general. If she didn't have that, would that force her out? You know, all these options are on the table, but tricky. And as we've talked about before, not a lot of precedent to see how they'd play out.
You mentioned this earlier, Brad, but Risa Vetri Furman, it sounds like she's not done her investigation. What else is she looking into?
Well, I don't know what else she's looking into. I'll say one thing for Risa Vetri Furman, compared to the statewide grand jury and other cases where there have been leaks. Her investigation was tight as a drum. It was tight as what the feds do. I could not get a nick out of her office. Nothing. Zero. They were tight. So, you know, I can't really tell you what else other than what she said at the press conference, which was, you know, there is an investigation continuing in general, and that the Barker case, which was referred to her by Judge Carpenter, is still under investigation.
And this James Barker was someone that she had fired, yes?
So someone she had fired who was under a protective order from the court.
And Furman, as I understand it, Brad, is she's a Republican, also running for judge in Pennsylvania.
She is, and she has effectively stepped aside at this point. I mean, she didn't say in so many words, I'm recusing myself, but my opinion is she's out of it. And this has been turned over to Kevin Steele, her first assistant, who, by the way, is a Democrat, and a first assistant district attorney from Bucks County, Michelle Henry, who's the earlier Bucks County district attorney. She had been the DA there. So these are two career prosecutors that she's turned this over to, and you're not going to see very much at all, if any, of Risa Furman as this goes forward. At the arraignment on Saturday, it was clearly Kevin Steele and Michelle Henry who were there to handle it.
And Chris, final question for those people that are cynical about politics. They look at a case like this and say, business as usual. Is that true here in the Commonwealth?
Oh, God, yeah.
Is it?
It is, Marty. I mean, you know, and Brad is a wonderful source on this. I mean, we've had way too many corruption cases, way too many problems. Let's look just in people elected recently with Rob McCord, with Attorney General Kane. A lot of problems at the mayoral level in the state. You know, it's a lesson slowly learned, and I wish I could have better news.
Well, I hate to end on that note, but I thank you both for joining us today in Radio Times. Chris Bork, thanks so much.
Thanks, Marty.
Thank you.
And Brad Bumstead, thank you for joining us as well. We also talked with Representative Frank Dermody. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about the program, including how to download a podcast of the show. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. We'll